Well, good afternoon, Bill. We're here for another session of our True Business Stories. And today we've got a special guest, Nick Klein, one of the principals at LBW Accountants here in Geelong. And you and I have known Nick for a number of years, but we're still going to have him on board and have a chat with him because he's got a great story.
He sure has. And you're quite right, Mark. We have known Nick through thick and thin over, I think, 13 years ago I first met you. And a lot's happened since then, of course. So today what we would like to do is talk to you, Nick, about some of your early background, and where you're born, where'd you come from, what was your first job, all those sorts of boring questions, and throw in some other ones along the way about work and some of the advice that you could offer to the people who listen to this podcast who are mainly small business, or not small and medium business owners.
So where did life start, Nick?
Oh, well, for me, life started in Carrimbah in Sydney, in New South Wales. Born in 1969, mum and dad, Peter and Margaret, who are still around, which I am forever thankful for, have three siblings, one older sister, one younger brother and one younger sister again. They're all, apart from my younger sister, out and about around the country. Eldest is in Canberra. My younger brother just moved to Walker in Armidale, and he's one of those guys that can do anything. So he's been a ranger with Steve Irwin. He's been a whitewater rafting guide. He's a shearer, a fencer, any of those sorts of things. If you want something done, you ask him. So from there, I moved down to Ballarat when I was eight. My father got transferred from Sydney to Ballarat to work at John Valves, which was the biggest foundry at the time in Ballarat, which has now since been knocked down and gone. And he was there for quite a while, travelled for a little bit. Then we all moved down, and mum got a job at Gardon Motors in Ballarat in Howard Street. Dad then, a couple of years later, got a transfer to Backwell IXL in Geelong, which is in Wood Street, which has been around since Moses was a boy, I think. So,
long time.
And still there, going strong. So we moved to a place called Elaine, which is about 30 yep. k's from Ballarat, 60 k's from here. Mum kept her job in Ballarat. Dad stayed at Backwell IXL for about 30 years with a break in the middle there where he tried to do a furniture shop. But that was back in the recession times when interest rates were 19 and 21%. So they got smacked around a little bit with that one. And then he ended up back at Backwell IXL. So we grew up in country. Our fun and games time was getting shoved out the door at 9 o'clock in the morning saying, don't come back till 6. So there were motorbikes, there were guns, there were paddock bomb cars, there were bikes, there was ferreting, there was rabbiting, there was all that sort of stuff, which is a bit different than today's fun and games for kids, I would imagine. So my first job was actually opposite mum's work in Ballarat when I was 13 or 14, pumping petrol.
Yep.
For the princely sum of about, I think it was $4.34 an hour. So, but for me, that was a huge amount of money.
You could fill up your car for $2.
Yep, and right. do it in the comfort of your seat as well.
Yes, right.
So we used to do the petrol, check the oil, do some window washing stuff. So that was all. It was a good entry, I suppose, into that whole value of money concept. So my brother and I did that for quite a while. Once I got a bit older and got my license, I got a job at Sovereign Hill, which was for a year or so as a student, at least in the last years of high school, was to be that dude in the print shop who did the wanted posters.
Yep.
So we used to have to form the typesetting on the roller printer, which was really interesting given that a lot of the people who came in had names that weren't what we were used to. So a lot of Asian, a lot of subcontinent tourists there, and trying to get their names was difficult at best. So, but it was a really good experience. It was a good customer service type opening in terms of being friendly, delivering what you were paid to do, I suppose. And you also represented at Ballarat, I suppose, and the history that it kind of tried to portray.
Well, so, just on that point, Nick, I think Sovereign Hill's a fantastic operation from the point of view of, for kids, and I know a lot of school groups go there, and I remember taking two of my grandkids there prior to COVID, and we're in the school. They've got a mock-up school there.
Yep.
And they still had, well, you two blokes are a lot younger than me, you wouldn't remember this, but they still had the little ink wells and the nibs and I tried to explain to my grandchildren that when I went to was in or the prep, it was called Bubs in my day. You had a slate with a like a slate pencil.
Yep.
And that was your iPad. That was the 1950s iPad.
Yep. Yeah. So, funny you say that. My sister, my younger sister, she was part of that Friends of Sovereign Hill, FOSH, they used to call it. So she was one of the children that used to dress up and they were the people that you looked at through the windows and viewed. So she did that for a couple of years as well. But again, it's all part of that, part of the community. So I think it was a good opening for that. After high school finished, I had a couple of choices. It's different these days where talking to my current kids, both mine and Kate's, the choices they have as to what paths they take start in year 10, and from experience, they have no idea. And it's really difficult to choose that path. Well, I think when I did it, they was told you can either be an accountant, a lawyer, an architect, or join the army. That was kind of it. So I had a flavour for graphics. I think I was quite good at drawing straight lines. So I put my bid in for Deakin to be an architecture student, but also applied to the Gordon for architectural drafting. And I was lucky enough to get into that one first. So there was something like 200 people put their name up and only 10 got in. So that was surprising, to say the least. But then I got the offer from Deakin to do architecture, so I opted to go down that path. And I think, in hindsight, probably a mistake. I did 2 years of architecture, really enjoyed the practical side of it. But then I think they took us up to the Art Gallery in Melbourne and stood us in front of a Turner or a Stevens and said, Nick, what do you see? Oil on a painting. That was about it. I couldn't read into it any more than that. And then straight after that, they did an open house project where they say, draw your house, draw your dream house. So I sat down, I thought about it, and I put something down on paper, and they presented to the group. And these other students were putting up things that looked like the equivalent of the Sydney Opera House with curves and fancy stuff. And good old Nick came along with a box. It was just a country ranch house with a big veranda around. And in its own right, it was fantastic, but completely boring and unimaginative. And I thought, I think it's time to change. So
that's why you became an accountant. Boring and unimaginative.
And a creative accountant, an imaginative one. So, no, actually, I stopped that. I got into Deakin Accounting, I think the next year or the one after, down at Warrnambool. And my partner at the time, who was not my current wife or my previous wife, the one before that, managed to get me into Deakin at the accounting in 1991. But in the year or so between that is I jumped ship and went and worked for Dad. So he was, again, the production manager at Backlaw Excel. And that's one of those experiences where I think you recenter and refocus as to what you really should be doing with your life. And there is absolutely nothing wrong with the work they do there, but it is hard yakka. It's long hours, it's dirty, it's physical. And in terms of career path, probably not a lot there. So I did that for a couple of years and also moved to Ballarat for a little bit to work in Norval Foundry down there, which was even worse again in terms of its environment. It was an old school foundry, that one. You had to climb up in a chimney to reline it with the packing, and then by wheelbarrow fill it with the coke to then. So I did that for probably 6 months, and then I got into Deakin and we moved from there. So my first year at Deakin was interesting. Had my first serious partner, had a lot of fun with some friends. So I think didn't do so well in the first year, but then woke up and in the next 3 years managed to finish that with an average somewhere between distinction and high distinction, which was good. So from there, I went to Melbourne, and I was actually, jobs were difficult to find back then. So I was an office boy, gopher, runabout for an international company, only a small one. So I did that and got that job through a friend for about a year and a half, and then managed to get a job with Pennell Kerr Forster, which is one of the second tier firms in Melbourne, but as an auditor. So that's what you do in accounting if you don't have any personality whatsoever. You jump to audit. So
and
I did that.
You have green pens in those days?
Absolutely. Yep. Right?
I'll tell you a little story about auditors. I was working at Cadbury Sweps, and they'd always come around before the audit, and you were instructed on what you could say and couldn't say. So,
Yeah, they're quite restrictive in those sorts of things. So I did that for about 2.5 or 3 years, I think, and then I moved to ANZ in Queen Street in Melbourne, but in the internal audit function there, and did that for a couple of years. And then my wife at the time got a job down at Ocean Grove as the director of the childcare centre down there, so we decided to move down, and I travelled to Melbourne for 2 or 3 years after that on the train. And I think the last summer I did that when it was a straight week of 40 degrees and you're in an old red Rattler and the guy beside you is asleep on your shoulder and dribbling down your shirt front, and I just thought, this has got to change. So, and we had just also had our first child, Sophie, and I was travelling a bit, so we'd been to the Philippines, to China for 5-6 week trips, and it was just getting a bit difficult, and would prefer to be at home in that regard. So I found LBW through a placement agency and put my two bits in. They didn't have an audit department at the time, so that was one bonus, I suppose, in terms of my offering to them. But I had to beg, borrow and steal to get that job. So one of the partners there kept batting me away, so I think I wrote 3 personal letters, went and saw him twice just to really say, "All right, can you please just give me a job?"
Well, we call that persistence.
Yes. or annoyance, whichever one. So when I joined there eventually, there was only maybe 16 or 17 people there, and the original partners, Peter, Andy and Richard, who have all but now left the firm just with the passing of time, and we're now up to about 80 staff, I think. And we cover off on, whereas before it was only really compliance work, tax returns, financial statements, is we've expanded that to include financial planning, superannuation through employment of Simon. He was a big impetus for that. Audit with, like, a proper audit, not me. People with real audit skills, with Sri as a partner there. But also valuation work and business advisory. So we've really covered it across. And I became a principal there in 2004, so about 4 years after I joined.
So, Nick, where does LBW stand in size or as an accounting advisory financial planning company in the regional Victoria?
Well, all up, we're numbers in Victoria. We're number 67, I think it is. It's in the recent Australian Financial Review, and that's based on turnover. So we've done quite well, I think. And size is not the measure of success. I think it's our service that really does that. And our turnover continues to grow mostly through word of mouth and referrals, not through advertising and not through anything else. So I think that certainly we are not the accounting firm for some people. But we do offer good service, good turnaround, personal service, responsiveness and quality of advice as well.
So when you were running around rabbiting, did you ever envisage you'd be the partner, the principal of an accounting firm?
Never. No, never. It wasn't even on the horizon at that point. What probably wasn't really thinking too much about career other than I enjoyed drawing straight lines that met at a corner with a roof on the top. So that was something that I probably always thought the path that I'd follow. And to be honest, if I went back, if I had the opportunity, the money, the time, whatever, I would go back and redo that, I think, because things have changed. Whereas in that life, I was not a creative person at all. Something's flicked, don't know what it is now one of my hobbies, or two of my hobbies is resin art and making home furniture. Just small bits and pieces, nothing huge. But the enjoyment you get out of going from start to finish when it's all coming from your head is something it's a bit like a men's shed at home. It really gives you that space to, can I say, sort crap out?
Is that okay? Look, I sympathise with you, because one of my secret ambitions all my life was to build wooden boats.
Yep.
I haven't got there yet, but maybe one day it'll happen.
The way you operate, Bill, I dare say it won't be long down the path. So.
But now, just moving, or a couple of things, we'll get back to business again in an issue. Outside of work, and I know that you have a big thing that you tow on the back of your car called a caravan, and you've got another smaller thing called a boat.
I do. Yep.
What happens outside of work?
I do.
Leisure-wise, that is.
I I relish the time I spend with my wife. To be honest, we don't get a lot of time during the week or on weekends, really, for that matter, with kids still at home, with work commitments. She's extraordinarily busy. She's the Director of Communications and Marketing at Bowen Health and does, by all accounts, an awesome job there, but it has a heavy toll in terms of her timelines and whatnot. So when we get away, that's the only time both of us really just breathe and let out and relax and not get to know each other again, but just reconnect. And we value that time enormously. The boat was, the kids have been pestering for pool. And everyone I was speaking to and my own experience is that we get a pool, I'm the poor sucker that's going to have to look after it. And my wife and I are the ones that are going to have to fund the parties when all the kids turn up there. So we've batted that away and said, we're going to buy a boat, and I can sell a boat. I can't sell a pool. We've only had that a couple of months. So that's yet to be enjoyed to its fullest, I think. But we have been taking it out a little bit over the last, but the weather has just been disgraceful for that sort of stuff.
Mark, so. I predict here, you know that ad about got to get a bigger boat?
Yeah.
I can see that coming.
And it's the car, then the boat.
No. I've actually downsized my cars, you'll be happy to know. So we do have the one patrol, but I'm now driving a Subaru Brumby, which is an awesome car to get around in. So.
All right, Nick, one of the issues, we've come out of COVID, a lot of businesses have suffered, particularly in the hospital, the smaller size business, I guess. Well, not only smaller, it is bigger, big business suffered as well. If you were a private business owner and you're floundering a bit because you haven't recovered properly from COVID, why should I come, if that was me, why should I come to you and how could you help me look forward for survival and thriving, as I call it?
Yep. It's a difficult and an easy one to answer, Bill. The difficult bit is that in order to look forward, you need to be certain of where you've been. Mm-hmm. So we would all, the starting of that would be to look backwards and go, what have you done? What are your systems like? What information do you have access to? Also, mentally, where have you been? Do you have the capacity to go forward? And then once that's all settled, you can start planning. Now, if you've got information, you can do a lot of things. And if you've got the wherewithal to actually follow through on plans and to start working and using the old phrase, work on the business rather than continue in it, then there's lots of things you can do. The best thing that people can do is stick to their knitting as well. So if you are a hospitality specialist, then stick to that and outsource everything else. Because as soon as you divert yourself from what you are good at, there's going to be a cost somewhere. And that cost could be either a little bit more than what it would cost to pay me or a solicitor or a planner to get stuff together, or it may actually cost you your business. Human resources specialists are also very much the flavour, and rightly so. The wave or the tsunami of resignations that we've been talking about for a year and a half just keeps coming. So, and it will continue to come. We're seeing a lot more movement in staff, both in our own business and in the market as well. So you need to have toes in all of those pots. Wrong saying, but you get what I mean. You've got to be across all that, and you can't do that if you're buried, making the coffee or toasting the toasty or whatever it is that you're doing. So, but again, you can't do all that yourself. So you need to align with people. And again, it is a cost, but normally the benefits far outweigh that. Sometimes there's a tail in terms of when that benefit comes in, and you've got to just be patient and have faith and do what you agreed to do. Continually revisit that plan. It's not something you set in stone and just go, we did that 5 years ago, it should still be relevant, because it's probably irrelevant a month later. So you've got to revisit all that continually.
Well, that's one of the reasons why I advocate one-page business plans, which are a pup out of a master plan, and they've got to be flexible, and if things change, you change your plan.
Yep.
You have to do it.
Yep. I think that probably the most important thing and something we go through regularly, and it does change, is to just sit back and consider why. Why do you do what you do? If you're doing it to make money, then there's a million ways to do that. But if you do it because you love doing what you're doing or because you want to be somewhere special in that field, then that can be your impetus or your driver to get everything else lined up. And if you can feed that down to your employees as to what the why of the business is, and there's a Simon Sinek YouTube, which was a TED Talk, I believe, which talks about the golden circle. If you do nothing else, for 15 minutes, listen to that one.
It's called The Why.
It's called The Why, yeah. It talks about the golden circle, yeah, which is the why, the what, and the how. Yeah. Not in that order, but it really – and I think the example he gives, which is really – it makes it very obvious, is if you compare Apple to Dell, right? And the way that they have a market share. And all those things are geared to, one, you having a very satisfied life in terms of your business, and it does flow into your personal life. But also it does actually mean profitability. It means comfort financially or security in terms of where you go.
Nick, one of the things that amazes me is my travels around business and recently doing some business award judging, is that it seems that the majority of people use Xero as their software for that, but hardly any of them can tell me what it does. And when I ask them about dashboards and monthly dashboards and how do they read it, they haven't got a clue.
No, they don't. And to be honest, they've got half of it right. They've stuck to what they're good at and haven't tried to focus on something that they're not, but they haven't then gone and got the help to interpret or to reform the data that they've actually got. And that's where they need to align themselves with a really good bookkeeper, a good advisor. And again, it's not a huge cost to catch up once a quarter, once a month, just to have a revisit on what's happened historically. So you can plan. You can't plan without knowing where you've been. So to be able to do that, and the systems are really good to provide that information. So Xero is a great product. It's much better than it was 5 years ago. So where we can and where it's available and where it's relevant for clients is where we're tending to move towards that platform as well.
It's interesting, the number of small businesses that I do some mentoring with, if I ask them if they've got an accountant, they say, no, I've got a bookkeeper. And I go, have you got an accountant? And they go, oh, the bookkeeper does everything. I said, yeah, but the accountant will give you bigger and better advice. And where do you see the balance between the two? The bookkeeper really does the books, I suppose.
Well, the bookkeepers are worth their weight in gold, a good one, whether it's internal or external. And again, that goes back to properly recording and providing data on where you've been. The accountant can reform that into a set of financials and tax returns, but you know most accountants in town can do that. The good ones can take that data and start conversations about where do you want to go. They can talk about estate planning. They can talk about security of your wealth. They can talk about structuring to make all that better. And again, that's all insurance stuff as well, so that you can sleep straight at night knowing that everything that you work for is protected and that everything you work for is working hard for you other than you working in the business as well. So estate planning, succession planning is one of the biggest ones that we do.
Well, we interviewed Amy Fisher recently.
Yep, from Succession, yeah.
Succession Plus, was it?
Succession Legal. Legal, yeah, that's right. Very good.
Along the same lines. And one of the – recently I had reason to talk to a family who were in business and their son was starting an online business. And I suggested to them that they go and sit down with their accountant and with a solicitor at the same time on the succession side and make sure you're all in the same room together at the same time and get the same message and hear the same story.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. It does get quite confusing for someone who is, again, hospitality, who doesn't have experience in accounting, legal, financial planning, to be able to speak in an understandable lingo is a plus, and I think we do that very well. Dumb it down is the wrong term, but it's where it ends up, I suppose. And legal is exactly the same. Some solicitors love to make things complicated. That needs to be knocked down and rebuilt into something to make it understandable for clients to just get stuff done at you know, biggest benefit, lowest cost. That's where we are at the minute, so...
So where do you see the next 5 years going? What's your sort of thoughts on business and the business, your business?
My business? Our business does well. We were very fortunate in that we were an industry that didn't suffer too much financially over the last 3 years. We did see a lot of clients struggle. Probably not as many as we thought. So, and that is a testament to the strength of the business, I think. And what we found is that the clients that were on edge before COVID very much struggled through that process, but the ones that were stronger had that why sorted, had their plans, had their data all ready and informed. They did pretty well. There's a lot of businesses that did really well as well. So we will continue that. So we've grown in staff numbers organically over the last 2 years from 65 to 80-odd. We do now outsource to Philippines. And that was really done as a stopgap to fill resourcing gaps because the people available just dried up. And that was a result of immigration policies and whatnot. So I think that will continue to grow. We're not looking to get any bigger significantly. We just want to get better at what we do again. So in terms of our service levels, that's where we're focusing on.
Fantastic. Another quick question is I've read some articles recently in speaking to an insolvency company, is that the ATO is becoming more aggressive on now bringing in, debts that are being owed by a lot of private companies, which they've taken a soft approach during COVID. Is that true? Is what I'm hearing and reading?
That's what I've heard, but we haven't experienced that yet. One of the things that we really push is that if you have any issues at all, is you just keep in contact with the ATO. If you keep talking to them and keep doing what you plan to do with any conversation with them, is you're generally okay. We always talk to our clients about their solvency, if it's an issue, about what their responsibilities are and what they can and can't do and what they should do to try and work their way through it. And we do even refer to insolvency agents to assist with that period of time when it does get a bit hairy so that they don't do the wrong thing to get through that. So, and that's about safety of wealth, protection of assets, that sort of thing. Yeah. So,
fantastic, Nick. So anyone listening wants to reach out to LBW, what's the website?
LBWCA.com.au. The general phone number 5221611.
But make sure you click on the Nick Klein connection. Yep.
Well, just on that, Bill. Absolutely. I'll take all good clients. But we have six other partners in the business. So there's Jeff and Lee and Simon who are tax and business advisory. Simon is superannuation as well. Kathy, who is superannuation, and Matt, who is financial planning. So, yep, happy to talk to anyone interested to have a discussion.
And I can say a good crew, and I should declare that LBW does do my tax, et cetera.
And we do it very well.
And you do it very well. Thank you, Nick. Thank you very much for chatting.
Thank you for coming.
Yeah, I endorse that. Thank you, Nick.